Welcome to episode 25 of Pull Up with Miles and Owen. Today, we've got a very special guest that we've been looking forward to talking to for a while. A national champion at Stanford, most outstanding player of the 2021 Final Four, first round pick of last year's WNBA draft, and a wing for the Atlanta Dream, and now playing in Athletes Unlimited. We're continuing that series too. Also, the host of the Sometimes I Hoop podcast. Haley Jones, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you. We wanted to start off with AU because that's what's happening in your life right now. How did AU come about for you? How did you find out about it, and what appealed to you about this setup?
Yeah, so I found out about it really last year. I know this is its third year going on, but I think last year is when I really started watching and seeing a lot of my past teammates watching Lexi, really is how I started seeing it. And then I got hit up with an email from Miss Megan Perry, the goat of all things running the show here. So she hit me up and asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And I decided I wasn't going to go overseas this year. Just taking a break coming off of college season, back to back the WNBA, I needed a little bit of time. So being able to be here, play against the top competition, have a lot of W players here. I think like 70% of us are W players, including like some W All-Stars, some of my Atlanta Dream teammates. So just having an opportunity to get to stay here stateside and still, I don't know, kind of do a lot of my podcast career opportunities or broadcasting and do all those different things while still be able to hoop and kind of get into playing shape before training camp. It was just kind of the best opportunity.
Every week AU's got this, as you were a part of a couple of weeks back, but has a couple of players on to talk to media. And Maddie Segrist is one of the players this week who similarly is just finishing up her W rookie season and then going into her second year, and yeah, talked about how there is no break really from the draft. You kind of finish the tournament, you finish the tournament, you go to the draft, you play a season, and you don't have any time to breathe really. So she was saying she was able to go back to Villanova for a bit. How mm-hmm. have you spent the off season, and how have you found that balance? Because like you said, like some players, the overseas might not be for them, but this was not an opportunity until a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Well, my off season has really just been based in Atlanta. I've been there doing a lot of stuff in the community, which has been really fun. Going and talking to schools, talking to young girls at some camps that we do at the Dream has been really great. Getting to really focus on what I want to do off the court with broadcasting. I've gotten to have some opportunities with NBA TV. Turner Studios is like 5 minutes from our apartments in Atlanta, which is great. So getting to go there, I did an ACC game at Georgia Tech against Notre Dame. So that was really exciting. So I've done both in studio and being on the sideline, which is very different, but both very fun. And then getting to do things with my podcast. I think it was also great. Like coming out of college, your day is so planned out to the T. It's like you're on that SpongeBob episode of Squidward, like repeating every day the exact same. And so once you get to the league, it's like you have to figure out what you really enjoy, what you like doing outside of basketball. Because for me, the way it is in Atlanta, like we're done by 1 p.m. every day. So how do you fill the rest of your day doing something that you enjoy, finding meaning, finding new friends, making friends outside of a team setting? Oh my God, it's hard. It's like meeting somebody for the first time is like a first date. It's so nerve-wracking. So just learning a lot about myself, but I've been in Atlanta really working with our player development, getting the weight room, liking to think I'm, you know, getting some more muscle. I think I've always been kind of a string bean in terms of like not a lot of build. So I'm working on that. But yeah, being in Atlanta was great.
I think it was two or three episodes back of your pod now. I think it was the Georgia Amor episode where she said something to you about like going to Stanford and keeping your academics up while also keeping up with your basketball schedule, that like she couldn't imagine that at Virginia Tech. But I can only imagine how much your schedule changed when you went pro and you didn't have any more classes anymore. School of that caliber.
No, seriously. Well, I appreciate the Georgia shout. I loved her episode. I'm glad that you guys are listeners, but it's so different. And I think that wasn't something that I was really thinking about, because you just think about, oh, well, I'm going to be pro. Like now I need to get my skill level up. I need to get conditioned, all these different things. But you don't think about like the first half of the season last year, I was still in school. So it kind of still felt like college in a way because I was still taking classes. But once those ended, it's like, so I don't just want to sit on the couch all day. Like, okay, now everything's a job. I'm not eating at the dining hall, so my meals aren't set. Now I'm figuring out how to eat like a pro, how to train like a pro. You know, I want to be social and be in my 20s, but at the same time, like, this is my job. So I'm not going to be going out with the rest of people my age. I'm at home. I'm going to bed. I'm an early bed person. I'm like in my bed, face mask, bonnet on by 10 p.m. Don't hit my phone. So like just figuring out all the different routines that work for me.
That for us as writers is prime writing time for us. Yeah. When everyone stops hitting our phones.
Yes. I'm a big do not disturb girl. So yeah.
Everyone else goes to sleep. And that's when we kind of wake up and start our days. But back to AU. So this is going to be your second straight week with Leash as a captain. Obviously you guys are teammates, but what have you seen from her as a captain that in terms of leadership that you haven't necessarily seen before, or have you seen from other players that you might not have known as well that now you're kind of getting to know a bit in AU?
Yeah, well, speaking on Leash first, Big Al, as I stick with Al. I don't know what it is. A lot of people say Leash. I like to say Al. In Atlanta, they always say Big Al, not the little one. So I like to remind her of that here. But I think it's really fun to get to play with her in the off season. Just honestly, really working on our chemistry has been great. Getting to have a lot of conversation about different reads. I think that me being here and being on Leash's team last week and this week, she's like, okay, so I need you to learn 1 through 4. And I'm like, yeah, girl, used to it, like whatever you need. So it's interesting for us to work out of all those different dynamics, how we're in different places on the court. So learning, you know, whether she prefers a handoff or coming off the screen, whether she, like, I like to throw a backdoor pass, as many people know, working on that. So like, working on all those different intricacies of our relationship has been great, but also like getting to really spend time with her. Like last week, I didn't have one of the rental cars that we have to share, so I got to ride with Leash every day to practice. And then I didn't see her over the weekend. I was like, oh my God, it was like separation anxiety. I was like, Alicia, I missed you. So I think getting to see her here, like really run the table. Like no one's really been able to figure out how to stop her. But I think also her becoming more vocal. Like I think with the Dream, she talked about it herself in a lot of interviews, like coming out of her shell. So I got to see that with the Dream, my first time meeting her. And then now like her in a captain role, like she's really running the show. Like everything goes through her. I think that she's getting that like vocal aspect to her where she's telling people where she wants them to be, how to get her open. So that's been great. But I think it's also really cool just getting to play with a lot of these other W talents that I haven't ever gotten to play with, only seen them from afar. So this week I'm with Sydney Colson, and I've only ever like seen Sid on social media, like when we play the Aces a few times a year, but getting to see her at AU, like she is so genuine. And I really have appreciated getting to spend time with her just in our one practice today, because like she is so vocal. And I think what a lot of people don't see about her is she has such a high basketball IQ. When I was watching her talk us through the plays at a point guard position, she's talking through, okay, sure, Karima said we can do this action, and Sydney's on the backside talking about, okay, we can get a corner action, we can do this and that. Haley, you like to operate out of here. Like she's never even played with me before, but she knows where I like to do things, how it likes to go. And when I do something to play with her, I think it's going to be really exciting. So I have a big shout out for Sid. I've been really impressed with her.
This is the first week that we're seeing Sid and TP together also. So you're kind of showing us the other side a little bit, because yes. I'm just waiting for the social media clips to roll out.
Those will come out too. Don't you worry. It's nonstop. It's so much fun.
You were talking a bit about defending 1 through 4. And after this, I'm going to stop boxing Owen out. I feel like I'm just going on a run right now. But it's always, it's always such a fascinating conversation to me when players talk about position versatility, because you went on record. I pulled up this article from 2021 that part of why you went to Stanford is you said that it makes the game so much more fun. Who wants to be limited when you're asked about playing multiple positions? But there are a lot of players, and I've spoken to some pros. We're in the New York market. So a few years ago, I spoke to Dede Richards and to Jocelyn Willoughby about what it takes for them to be prepared every game, knowing that they could be going in there and defending 1 through 4. And they said, like, honestly, it's really hard. Like, you want to be out there and doing whatever you can for your teammates, but the scout is so much more difficult because you don't necessarily know. You obviously have to be ready for everybody, but also you can be put into roles, into whatever role as the game needs. So how do you kind of find that balance? And what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of just being that versatile?
Yeah, great question. Well, I sounded real wise back then. My goodness. I think that there's a lot of different aspects to it. I think it's a double-edged sword where, you know, on one hand, it's like, yeah, I know every position. You can sub me in at every position. I know how to do this and that. But it's also like, I know for me with the Dream last year, when I first came in, I was learning the wing. Then we had Ari and D-Rob to go down. So now Tanisha's like, Haley, why don't you already know the place? And I'm like, girl, I'm trying to figure out everything right now. Like, so then I'm learning it from the point guard. And so now here at AU, every time there's a sub really, I'm playing a different position. On every team that I'm on, I'm asked to have a different role. And so I think, like, on one hand, that's really exciting. But on the other hand, it is difficult, like Didi and Jocelyn were saying, because, like, you're understanding a new system from every position. But then also when you're talking about an on-ball scheme, for example, right? If you're icing and I'm the guard, I have to remember I'm getting up on the hip, I'm shifting this way, don't use screen, whatever. But then, oh, the next possession, if there's a sub, now I'm the big. And now I'm the one calling out the screen. Now I'm playing the other half of the ice and I'm understanding how to do this and that. So I think it's cool because in one way that works hand in hand, so you can really help out your teammates. But another way, like, you have to be really locked in because, like, if you miss an assignment, nobody cares that you were just the other position. Like, that doesn't matter. You said you can play 1 through 4. So now you have to do it. So yeah. I think that it's, you kind of put yourself in that boat, honestly. And I think that we all just buy into it. It's never like an excuse or a complaint or anything. I think that's something that we all want to challenge ourselves with. And if we were given this build and we have the opportunity to do all those positions, I think it sets us apart. I think we're an asset to every team that we're on because, like, with our team, last week TP was gone, and so then when she was gone, I was playing more than four. When she came back, all of a sudden I'm back up PG to air, and so then all the different things. So I think it's, there's advantages and disadvantages, but it's a position that I cherish to be in.
We're kind of in an era of AAU where I feel like a lot of kids from really early on specialize in one sport and are so ultra focused on one sport. And so I'm curious to hear your take on how your parents approach to kind of all sports and not limiting you to a single focus so early on helped you develop as a basketball player as you grew.
Yeah, I see the specialization. I think it's really crazy. Like, I know I'll go back. I was really excited. My senior year of college, I did my first Haley Jones camp in San Jose at my high school. And I remember being so excited. And some of the parents came up and talked to me and they're like, okay, so we're starting on a lift program. All she has basketball. And I'm like, how old is she? What? Like, that's so crazy to me because my parents raised my brother and I, and we did every sport imagine. Like, any interest that we had, we were going to go do it. And then it was our choice to decide what, like, we liked the most. And I think also we were such busybodies. So I did everything from soccer, gymnastics. I did gymnastics until I was too tall and I was just hanging from bar to bar. And then I did swim team. My mom, like, can't even swim. She's just cheering for me to get out of the pool and make it out alive. I did water polo. Those girls are vicious. That wasn't for me, but, like, I did everything imaginable. And I think that not only did that help me, like, you pick up different things from different sports. So soccer is my other favorite sport. So, like, the footwork, the vision that comes with soccer, I think that that helps me, like, that endurance part really helps me in basketball. I feel like I can play for long periods of time, that endurance aspect of my game. I think so those little things, I think a big thing for me with playing all these different sports is, one, like, you meet so many different people playing all these different sports, and it's allowed me to learn how to work with people, because not every team that you have you're going to be, like, besties with, and that's fine, but, like, you have to learn how to work with somebody and get the most out of them to get that common goal that you share. So I think working in all those different areas helped me with that. But I think also, like, I didn't burn out. I feel like if I only did basketball and only trained in basketball, I wouldn't, like, enjoy it as much as I still do now. Like, it's still fun for me. And I think that's because, like, I grew up playing basketball in the gym with my parents. Like, my mom was my trainer in our cul-de-sac, or, like, my grandparents had a half court in their driveway. So, like, that's how I grew up working out. And then after my knee injury, my freshman year, that's when I started working with Packy Turner. And that's when I got a trainer. Like, it started getting more serious. Like, this is going to be my career. But, like, up until then, it was really just, like, the joy of the game, as it still is. But it's just a different balance nowadays. But specialization at, like, age 7 is so crazy to me. I always tell girls, like, do it all. Have a social life. Like, be a whole person, because you don't want to tie your identity to that for the rest of your life.
Totally. I want to follow up on a couple things there. Firstly, what's it been like for you having your parents coach you growing up and then kind of transition into the era of just them being fans of you and your biggest supporters?
Yeah. So having both parents as coaches is kind of hard when you're younger. My mom coached me and my dad coached my brother. And so then when we were younger, my brother and I confided in the opposites. And I was like, mom, you yelled at me too much today. And my mom, it was so funny growing up. Like she was the type where she could leave it at the gym. When I was younger, I would get in the car with her after she yelled at me and made me run extra. And I'm like, oh my God, like this sucks. Can grandma pick me up? Like I need a 7-Eleven run. And I get in the car and my mom's like, okay, so you want to hang out? You want to watch a movie tonight? I'm like, I need some time away from you, woman. Like, I'm not doing this. And so I think it was really, we had to work on our relationship and how for me to leave things at the gym, but then also her give me that time in the car. Maybe I rode home with someone else, but I had a really bad game and a hard tournament, whatever it may be, just like finding those little things. And my mom's my best friend now, so we can laugh about it. But as we changed that relationship, it was really when I got into high school, because she'd always coach my AAU teams. I may have like played on a different team every now and then, but she was my main coach. When I got into high school and I played for Coach Phillips, who's one of my favorite coaches ever, my mom had to have a conversation with Coach and be like, okay, I'm handing you my baby. Like you need, like I need to trust you, right? So they had many conversations about it, but those first few games, my freshman year, and I'm struggling and you have that little jump. I remember getting in the car, my parents wanting to break down the game and be like, okay, so pull up huddle, sign in. And I'm like, I lived an hour away from high school. So like, they're like, we have an hour drive. Let's break it down. And then we'll have dinner when we get home. And I'm like, that sounds like horrible. I would rather like bike home. I don't want to do this. And so figuring out how to be able to talk about the games and help me get better. But like, okay, Haley needs the night to cool off. We'll talk to her about it tomorrow. Just like having that open communication was really helpful with me as I kind of moved on from them being my coaches.
I'm glad that you stuck with team sports, because some people would have been like, I'm only going to play individuals so that I don't with all these people. So that sounds like you found a good balance.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I'm a big tennis fan. And let me tell you, like there's the parents that are coaches of professional tennis players. It can get real intense.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
I the other thing I wanted to follow up on there was when you mentioned your court vision, and in talking about soccer being your other favorite sport, I'm always fascinated with how different sports kind of converge into a person's skill set in a particular sport. And one of my favorite parts of your game is when you grab a board and you're just taking it up the floor and you're kind of scanning the floor, and either you make the right read or you keep it yourself, finish for the layup. What do you see in those moments where you've grounded, where you've grabbed the rebound and you're taking it up and you're scanning, and how does that develop for a player just building that court vision?
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the game as well. So I'm glad we share that. That's my favorite part. I think, well, my other favorite sport is soccer, and I was center mid. And so that's how I got to have like those ideas of visions and seeing gaps and things. So in the soccer field, they're very apparent where you have gaps to send a through ball or do all these different things. And when I started playing basketball, I was like the smallest person on the team because I played up. So I got that guard skill set. But then as I got older and played my own age group, I'm the biggest. So now I'm actually able to get rebounds. But when I get it, I already have that foundation of being a guard. And so I think that's when that coast to coast kind of first started happening for me. It was when I was really young. And honestly, when I get a rebound, I have no ideas in my head. I just start going. I'm free ball. I'm like free flowing every time I have the ball, which I think is great, because whenever I typically, when I do turn it over, it's because I like have predetermined what I'm going to do. I'm like, this read is going to be there. I'm going to make this move. I really did it the other game, I think like on Sunday, and I just tripped and fell instead. Like he had other plans for me. So I really just try to like do it on the fly. And when I'm pushing the ball off the court, I have to think about who's running with me. So like at Stanford, if I had Lexi and Anna Wilson running with me and I got Cam running down the middle, I have mad options. Anna's smaller. She's probably going to spot up in the corner. I got Cam running the lane, and Cam always needed to run the opposite lane of me so I could push and finish. And it's an easier pass across lane lines. And on the other side, I got Lexi. If she's out in front, she's cutting to the rim and I'm throwing up that pass. She's not, she's also going to spot up. So I think like, it starts with understanding who you're playing with and understanding how they like to move on the court. So that helps me make reads, is really understanding my teammates. But then at the end of the day, if they're not open and I have a sliver of a lane, like I'm pushing it. I don't know how I'm going to finish. I don't know what's happening, but I'm going, and something will come to me as I get into the lane. So I think it's really just kind of keeping an open mind and reading what the defense gives me. But I feel like that's always been my favorite thing to do, whether it's on the soccer field or on the court.
I think that that's also such a big skill for making that transition to the pros, because that's what a lot of young players always talk about is kind of the speed of the game. And you are, but when you take a rebound and you start pushing in transition, you're kind of getting a bit of a head start. And it's when it really like slows down and you have to be in the half court sets that you really have to like go through methodically, because everyone's so strong, everyone's so fast.
Yeah.
What was a transition for you that took a little bit longer, or what came easier to you as a rookie than you expected?
Yeah. I think defensively is the biggest place I have to grow moving into this year, compared to last year. I think defending more on the perimeter was something that I did sporadically at Stanford, really just through switches and things, because Tar had me mainly at the four. Still offensively being able to run the one, but like I was usually guarding the power forward. And so we could always switch one through four, but that wasn't my primary option. And so with the dream, I was guarding through all the on-ball screens. And I think I wasn't executing our schemes as well as I should have. And so moving into this year, that's really something I want to focus on. And I think a lot of that, talking with Coach Tanisha about it, is just like watching more film and really locking into not only in the schemes, but like understanding the players better to know their setup moves. Cause a lot of time, like I may be in the scheme and then DB hits me with her classic right, left cross. I didn't see it coming the first time we played Connecticut. Like, I didn't know that was happening. And so then she got me out of like twice, or playing against Tiffany Hayes and like just understanding her quickness, or guarding whoever else it may be on the perimeter. I think understanding their tendencies is going to help me a lot moving into next season. But I think something that I may not have been shocked by, but like I was really happy about what translated, is just like, I think that my playmaking never left. I think for me now it's thinking about playmaking for myself and not only others, and understanding when I need to be the threat, and like how I think a thing for me, even at Stanford, is like understanding that what I like to do is playmake. But like, what's going to make it easier for me to get my teammates open and do all this different stuff is maybe I go get a bucket first. And then now there's more pressure on me. So if I get by them, now it's 5-on-4. So like, understanding I have to have people playing me honest and play make for myself. And then I can go get to what I like to do. I can get in there, I can distribute, I can make a cool pass, I can do all these different stuff. So I think those are the two things that I'm really excited for to see growth in this season.
That's awesome. And you bring up Tanisha, and I know that the culture in Atlanta has undergone such an overhaul in the last few years. But my favorite moment from the draft last year was when you go up on the podium and Tanisha was like, I'm texting you. Why aren't you picking up your phone? So how is that relationship kind of? Oh, and also, I don't know if I should apologize for this or not, but last year I took that photo of you at the Empire State Building that became a meme on WNBA.
Stop, that was you? Oh my God.
In the camcorder. So I don't know if that's I should apologize funniest, for that.
That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I literally felt like the Mean Girls mom all day. Just like having to pull up with my camcorder on going around.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
But how has your relationship grown with Tanisha from draft day? And how has she helped you? Because being a recent player in the league, how has she helped you make a transition? Because she still knows so much about not just player tendencies, but about kind of the culture of these W locker rooms.
Yeah, I love playing for Coach Tanisha. She's one of my favorite coaches I've ever had, honestly. I think her being such a recent player, like you mentioned, is so special in the locker room playing with professionals. Like, it's different, you know? We're all pros. We're all adult women. So her ability to take control of us so easily is amazing. And I think also just working with her at the point guard position, like she was hard, and like she's hard, she's gonna push you, she's gonna get in you, she's gonna do all these different things, but like I respect her so much that I want that. And I think not only me, but like everybody on the team is like seeking her basketball mind because of how smart she is. But I think also like she's so relatable. Like she was just in the league. She knows how it works. Like if you're not getting it done in practice, she'll sub you out and get up in there and show you how to do it. So it's like, I can't have her coming out here and show me up. Like I gotta go. And I think it's also like how much she's bought into the dream and Atlanta in general. Like she's so passionate about the game and about the dream and what we can make it and how much of an upside us as an organization has. I think last year being the jumping point of like getting that playoff berth, being a fifth seed and like not performing how we wanted to in the playoffs, but all that's doing is motivating us going into this season. But I love playing for Tanisha, like going to go get coffee with her throughout the season and just talking basketball, but also like talking hoops for maybe like 30 minutes, but then just like, how are things? How's the transition? Like getting to know me as a person. I really appreciate it. Because it's like, you don't take it personal at that point, you know, when she's on me, when she's doing this and that, or she's yelling at me, shows me at the game, on me during film, whatever. Like, I know it's all coming from a place of like her wanting me to be the best I can be, and knowing what she sees for me and my potential. Like every time she's on me, I know she's just pushing me to get there. So I really enjoy playing for T.
You spoke earlier about the relationship you're building with the city of Atlanta and getting out into the community. And I know you have family in Georgia. What's that been like, building this relationship with a city that now you're a pro basketball player in?
Yeah, it's really cool. Moving to Atlanta was definitely really exciting for me because I have family in Georgia. But you know, I'd only been to Atlanta like once or twice prior. Like when we go see the family, like they live closer to the border of Florida. So like we're flying to Jacksonville and then going. So I hadn't really spent a lot of time in Atlanta and I didn't really know a lot of people in the city. So it's scary, like going to a new place, you don't already have a built-in community. Like I remember I made a really good friend who was an alumni on the Stanford track team. And like, she slid in my DMs after the draft and was like, oh, like, let's go hang out. And like, you know, making a new community for yourself. The first time we hung out, I was like on FaceTime with my boyfriend. I was like, you think she's gonna like my outfit? Like, is this okay? I tried on like 10 different things. Like, it's just so different. But being able to do things in the off season in the community, work a lot with elementary schools, and the Atlanta Dream does different camps where we combine like a STEM program as well as basketball, giving them a lot of different opportunities, has also been really fun. I got to go speak with our president at the Capitol building and do a bunch of cool stuff there. So I think it's been a really fun offseason for me to get to, I don't know, get to know the city, get to know people, do a lot of different fun things. And I'm really excited. Like I went to a Falcons game, Hawks game. I'm excited to go to Atlanta United. I'm not really good with baseball. I'm going to go to a Braves game this summer. Like just going to all the different sports teams. The U.S., the women's national soccer team is coming. You know, I'm at that game at Mercedes-Benz. I'm so hyped up.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm glad to just hear how much you're able to give back, but also get from the community as well, because sometimes, you know, it takes a while for people to acclimate to new cities. And we had Angel McCautry on last week, and she was telling us how she made obviously Atlanta her second home. And it was just really great to just see how much a city can really absorb a player.
For sure.
So I'm sure you're going to have that experience. Yeah. Before we get you out of here, because I know we've held you for a bit, but we have to, we're both huge fans of the pod, as we mentioned at the top, we have an opportunity to talk to you about it. So how did your relationship with the Players Tribune come to be? And where did the idea for the pod originate?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love talking about the pod. It's so much fun. So it was my senior year, senior fall, and my agents had reached out to me saying that the Players Tribune reached out to them with an opportunity. They've been looking for a female voice for a podcast and they think I would be great. And I was like, me? What? Like, yeah, let's do it. And we jumped on a call with them and they were like, okay, well, we want to call it Sometimes I Hoop, which had been my Instagram bio for like years before the podcast. And I remember literally putting that in my bio and being like, this sounds kind of lame. Let's do it. And I just put in my bio, like my freshman year in college, because it just rings so true to me. And so they brought it to me as an opportunity. And then the best producing team ever, they flew out to Stanford to like meet me. And we went to dinner with my parents and like got to talk to them and really just create that personal relationship. And they've been so amazing. So just getting to come up with the ideas for the podcast, how we want to talk about things, who we want to talk to, all the above. It's just been so amazing.
The conversations have been so good. It's such an amazing podcast. And I'm curious to hear how you prepare for the episodes. Like what goes into your research process or just preparation process before these interviews?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is my producing team. I'm going to be straight up. They do a lot of it. So it's kind of like we'll come up with a run of script, right? And it's kind of the same cadence to every episode. We talk about, you know, current landscape. We get into like their early basketball hoops, the recruiting process, and then whatever it's like, dependent on the guest. And then within that, then we'll take into account, like, they'll do a lot of the research on like the nitty gritty. And then I'll bring into play what I know about them from playing against them, playing with them, my personal relationship. So we're able to bring both these together. And then looking through, like, watching their past interviews, looking through their social medias, finding out what they're interested in, things to talk about on that end. And then, you know, talking to people that know them. Like, a lot of them, I have mutual friends that connect. Some will throw in different questions, and sometimes they'll be on and be like, oh, you know that? Or like, oh, like, they're surprised that we know these things. And then my team and I always love that. And so I think that's kind of the process, is really just kind of like locking into making everything so personalized for our guests while still keeping that. Sometimes I hoop cadence to it and the things that we're going to talk about and guests know, adding little spices of myself where I can. So I think, I love doing the pod. It's a really fun experience. And I think my team is great.
I think when you say adding little spices of yourself, that's kind of a perfect encapsulation of what you're bringing uniquely to the pod. And It's because you know all of these people, all of these players, and you already have that relationship. And I think that that is something that Owen and I, now in our second year with this pod, that's something that we're working towards. We're trying to build relationships. And that's because we want to be able to share stories. And you've got an in, you know so many of these great personalities. You know what buttons to press sometimes, because you know where the stories are, you know where the bodies are buried. But I think we're seeing this kind of like on a larger scale across sports media, where it's players growing their own platforms and being not needing media, like general media, to be the conduit for these stories. And I just love that we can hear things directly from the source. And that's something that you've done so successfully with the pod. But from your perspective, because it is this ever evolving with the growth of social media and with players having more of their own voices, how have you seen this growth, and how do you think it's beneficial to having those stories told without, you know, playing a game of telephone where they're warped six times by the time they, you know, editors and writers and stuff retell them for you?
No, I think you hit it perfectly, where players are in all sports are really taking it kind of on themselves to create this platform for themselves. I think that something for me that I was inspired by in high school was seeing people like Asia Wilson talk about different mental health struggles, or see Natasha Cloud speak on all of these different avenues, whether it be mental health, social justice, things happening in the W, just talk about all these different things. And so seeing them kind of be the trailblazers for myself, or in high school, I may have been in middle school, honestly, when the whole shut up and dribble situation came out with LeBron, right? Like, watching all of those things happen, and then how athletes then broke out of that shell of only being able to talk about sports. And now you have athletes in every different arena, like, talking about anything imaginable, I think was really inspiring for me to then realize that, like, me seeing myself holistically and as more than an athlete, I then had to take that out to my audience and be like, okay, I am more than an athlete. I am more than just a basketball player. I went to Stanford. I know all these different things. Like, I have a background in education, whatever it may be. Like, I am more than capable to speak on any topic. Just because I have the platform because of basketball doesn't mean that I can't speak on all these different things that are important to me. And so I think athletes have done a great job with that, with really growing their platforms to speak about things that they care about, whether it be inside or outside of their sport. And I think also one thing that I really loved about it is, like, you see people who may not be the best on their teams, but, like, people love them because they're so authentic and so genuine, and, like, showing that personality side to them. Those are the athletes who do the best in NIL, who have the best endorsements, because, like, you know, that's, like, I want to watch people because I, like, with Sid, for example, like, you know, people think she's hilarious, right? Like, they're going to go watch the Aces game because they want to see Sid. Like, you're going to go watch LSU, obviously, because Angel, Flagey, Haley, like, Anissa, they're all amazing hoopers. But, like, you love them on social media. Like, you love seeing Angel Reese TikTok. You love seeing Flagey's music, whatever it may be. Like, you love seeing the fashion that some people are into, like, whatever it may be. I know when I'm getting into other sports and watching other things, like, I like Trini Raman's TikToks. Like, I'm going to go follow her, and people are going to go watch the soccer team because of her. People are going to do whatever, just because, like, they're showing who they are. And I think when athletes share their stories and you hear something amazing about them, then you're going to watch them do what they do. And so I think that athletes have done a great job on really capitalizing on that opportunity.
It's so true. I think it's like one of the biggest things that Miles and I always talk about in growing the game is just sharing stories and people getting to know these players as people and what their interests are. I've got two quick ones before we wrap up here. The first one being, you mentioned earlier, you did a little sideline work, a little studio work.
Yeah.
How do the nerves differ, or maybe are they similar to pregame basketball nerves? Like what's different about being nervous before you do a TV hit?
Let me tell you, I don't know if this is just me, but like, I don't really get nervous for basketball games. Like, I don't know what it is, but for that first in studio broadcast, I was having the shakes. I was like under the desk. And then like, I remember the first time Renee threw it to me. I was like, oh my God, that's me. I have to talk. Oh my God, I don't have a script. What am I supposed to say? And then like, I remember them telling me, I sit down, we're going, like, I took like way too many pages of notes. I'm not about to be on TV scrolling through my iPad of 3 pages of notes. Like, I was so overly prepared. And then they were like, Haley, you have camera three. I'm like, what does that even mean? Where is camera three? I'm just talking. And so I think it was such a different like preparation thing for me. I'm so much better off the noggin. Like, whenever I used to give presentations in school, I could get up there and BS and do great. But it's those presentations that I prepared for. Oh my God, I couldn't talk. I was so nervous. But like on a basketball court, that's what I do. Like, I'm out there just doing it, something that I love. And so I think now I'm starting to get more comfortable being in the studio, having a cake face and makeup on, like having everything done. It's just like a different environment. But I think for me, like, what I say is good. It's all very genuine. It's all very prepared and has a lot of research done behind it. But like, now I feel like I bring out so much of my personality on the podcast. It's like, now I have to let that personality come out with 10,000 cameras and lights in my face and like not let that come into my show. Now I have to like turn it up times 10 so that the camera can really get to see who I am.
TV hits are so scary. That was so relatable. It's terrifying.
Yeah, that was the most relatable part of this whole interview. I remember the first time I did a TV hit, I also had like 3 pages of notes.
Yeah.
And the person I was with just handed me a highlighter and were like, grab a couple of like your favorite stats, because you are not going to be able to look down and read all of that. And it's because I didn't have a prompter or whatever. And yeah, that's what I had to do. I had to like trust myself that I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm just reading off of a screen or reading off of a page in front of me. And then that's going to sound like that. It sounds exactly like that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's horrifying. But you know what? We did it.
All right. Final question. We'd be remiss if we didn't have a music question here to close it out. And our buddy Mark wrote a great piece about your love for R&B.
Mark is one of my favorites. Shout out, Mark. I love him.
Shout out, Mark.
He's the best. So we had Dory and Izzy Harrison on a couple weeks ago, and we're talking about Dory used to play the saxophone and similar themes in that conversation to not limiting yourself to just sports or one interest, etc. And Dory turns to Izzy and asks a question that I'm now going to steal for every guest we have, which if you're pressing play on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever you have, shuffle, who are the four artists that are most likely to pop up for you?
Oh, Dory, good question. But I guess now you, Owen, good question.
I can't take
it. Yeah. Well, first of all, Dory does like everything. I didn't even know she plays saxophone, but she's like a talented makeup artist. She does everything. So if I were to just think off of my Spotify Wrapped from last year, like my top four artists, let me see what carries over to right now. Right now, what's coming on shuffle? Stevie Wonder's coming on shuffle. I just took a road trip and I listened to like almost all of his albums top to bottom, which is amazing. My new favorite song is Superwoman. Stevie Wonder. I've been in a bit of a Brent Faiyaz kick recently. So I would say him. Oh my gosh. I've also been in a bit of like an Al Green kick for some odd reason. I don't know what it is. Like I listened to him before games too. And it, for some reason it's getting me hyped up. Like I was just singing Still in Love with You literally before we hopped on this call. So I'm very much a throwback girl. So I would say Al Green, Stevie Wonder, Brent Faiyaz, and oh, I love Beyonce. Do I want to say Beyonce? That's
always
not basic. I mean, like, everybody can say Beyonce. Oh yeah, Beyonce, like all stages of Beyonce. I was late onto the Renaissance wave, and then I listened to it, and then all of a sudden, like, Beyonce's in my top five Spotify rap because I would not stop listening to the album top to bottom, like, and then the transition from song to song. But honestly, my favorite Beyonce music is listening to her Homecoming Live album, specifically her Deja Vu. Oh my God. So good.
Anytime the clips from Homecoming pop up, like the dance break, I'm watching it.
I'm watching the whole thing. I literally saw on TikTok somebody showing, like, they were at it live. And I was like, first pushing, like, footage of this, I would have been freaking out if I saw her walk down with all the different people and the dancers and the whole thing. Like, I probably would have passed out at the concert. Like, you look on ESPN Update, Haley Jones, Beyonce, shock. Like, carted out of Coachella. Like, it would have been so bad.
I do think we could do another 25, 50, 100 episodes, and no one will ever tell us that they use Al Green as hype-up music for basketball, for professional basketball
games. Honestly, my favorite pregame song that I sing is either House Is Not a Home by Luther Vandross, that gets me hyped up, or my best karaoke song is... Oh my gosh, Teddy, no, it's not. Oh my God, my mom's going to kill me. But you know, if we ever talk again, I'll tell you my favorite karaoke song.
Yes.
Take my heart out. Uh-oh, my mom's going to be so upset with me because it's her favorite song too. Mom, I'm sorry.
First time you come up to New York this year, we'll make it right. And
yeah. Please, I'll have it in the pregame playlist. I'll tell you.
Thank you so much, Haley. This was a really fun conversation, and we're excited to continue to watch you hoop this week, next week, for the next couple weeks of Athletes Unlimited, and then again this summer back with the Dream. Thanks so much for joining us, for pulling up with us, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Haley.